Okay, so we're resuming where we left off, Dad. It's April 7th, 2018. I'm here in Logan, Utah with Dad at his house in Country Club Drive. It's a beautiful spring, rainy day. And so we're going to resume. Yeah, and everything looks like it's functioning properly. So in our last conversation, we talked about moving to Utah and taking care of the grandmas and how did let's talk just briefly a little bit about how the kids integrated into Logan. I mean, what was your perspective about maybe child by child, each one of us, how did we integrate into Logan? You know, the friends, and was there
I think that the foundation argument or understanding that needs to be made about that question that you just asked is that what your mother and I have tried to do to some degree of success is we can't let you kids find your own way.
Mm-hmm.
We're concerned about your faith and the quality of your spirit, but let you do as much as you can do and try not to govern you as much. I'm not sure if that makes any mm-hmm. sense, but to give you as much freedom. For example, you, Matt, had friends that were the best
influences.
I'm not saying they weren't good kids, but they were what we, in the vernacular of the day, were wild.
And, mm-hmm.
They were had habits that weren't very good. I thought they were good kids, but they were just struggling trying to find out who they were.
Yeah.
And so you ran with the crowd. It was kind of rough. And I spent a lot of time on my knees and a lot of time talking to the Lord about you
mm-hmm.
to make sure that you were okay and with that kind of a crowd. It isn't that we're better than they.
Yeah.
We had a different lifestyle. So, you had a, I thought you and your friends, I thought they were really good kids. They just had habits and
yeah.
behaviors that weren't consistent with the faith that we had.
Yeah.
And so, I never said you can't run with that crowd.
Yeah, you never did. Yeah, you never did. And I sincerely appreciate all the prayers in my behalf.
Yeah.
I'm sure I accelerated your grayness and your baldness.
but each one of the kids were different, and we tried to treat you as individuals.
Yeah, yeah. Did Chuck and Lisa have any difficulties, with the move, integrating here into finding friends and that, or did, did it just kind of...
I don't remember. Lisa didn't. She was a beautiful girl.
Mm-hmm.
And talented.
Yeah, and super friendly and
she
loves
just
people.
Fit in.
Yeah.
She kids were there. Charlie got some good friends quickly.
That mainly through the ward? I mean, were there good kids in the ward?
I don't remember. I'm sorry, but I can't remember anyone struggling to any inordinate amount.
Yeah.
I mean, there was always going to be homesick. We understood that.
Yeah.
There was, that was true for mom and dad, too.
Yeah, yeah, right.
We missed our friends there, and we had good friends. They were...
Ty would have been seven, so I assume he would have picked up friends from the neighborhood and the ward.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a nice neighborhood down there. Were lots of kids running around and
okay.
had that big schoolyard over
yeah.
there and we were kind of I was going to say maybe too free, but we let you do things.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I'm sure you were surprised sometime when you'd say, could I take the boat?
Yeah, and you'd say yes. And you'd say yes. I would be surprised.
You know,
I was really shocked.
And, you know, and can we take the car? Can we, you know, we go to Ogden? You know, and I would say yes. I trusted you.
Yeah.
It's a little dangerous and a little leap of faith. But, you know, try to give you as much latitude as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the case when we sent Lisa to Europe.
Yeah.
Let her go. You know, let her fly. Just let your kids and do the things. And that's why I didn't let you run with a crowd that it was questionable at times. Charlie did, I had a little Mercedes. I let him take a friend and go to
up the north and west,
you know, to a fair, a big world's fair.
Yeah.
So I let him take my Mercedes, new little Mercedes, two-seater Mercedes, and let him take a friend and go, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to say you trust the kids. It's another thing to, this is our demonstration.
Right.
Maybe I wasn't saying anything to you, but I'm to myself, do I really trust him?
Yeah.
And let him go.
Did you and Mom have disagreements about that level of trust?
You know, we didn't, you know, we've had kind of a golden marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are things that we disagree on, but with the kids, you know, it's been, Mother and I have always been faithful in our prayer. Our faith is secure.
Yeah.
You know, we're like any couple, we have problems.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you have to work out our issues. But working with the kids, we've pretty well always been in harmony.
Yeah.
We haven't had any real disagreements about what we would let you kids do, or what, you know. Your mother has been wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
She's devoted her life to the family.
Yeah, she has. She really has.
When you look at, if the evidence of that, all you have to do is look around our house today.
Yeah.
And the house is full of family.
Right. Right.
I mean, this is who we are.
Right.
And it's family and faith.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. And that's the way we made our life. If I'm talking about career, surely I would have gone to Milwaukee.
Yeah, right.
If we're talking, you don't do things. And so anyway, we came back. I'm rambling, but we came back. This is the heart of it. Mother has devoted her life.
Yeah.
From early in the morning till late at night, this is her life.
Yeah.
And she's loved it. She's been great at it. So.
So before we leave Arizona, were there any, maybe who are the one or two people that were particularly influential in your life in Arizona that made a big impact, on you?
Well, we have to. I think Mother would be quick to join me in this and say that the biggest impact that we had were the Garns.
Okay. Why?
Daryl and Irene Garn were two of the best people that we have ever known. They were absolutely faithful. They knew what they wanted to do. They had a gospel-centered life. And Daryl and I played golf and handball and everything together. Daryl and I, he was on the high council and became a member of the state presidency. When I was on the high council down there, everything was together.
Mm-hmm.
We went on vacations together, you know, raising our families together.
Yeah.
But Daryl and Irene were absolutely faithful. Mother learned how to cook from Irene, you know, that, you know, Mother will say very freely that she learned a lot of things from Irene, just one of these great people. And Daryl was the same way with me.
Yeah.
You know, I had to learn the ways of a master.
Mm-hmm.
And Daryl, he's absolutely clean guy.
Yeah.
And so we vacationed together. You know, we played golf together. We played handball together. We just raised our families together.
Yeah, I love being in their house. It always felt warm and and open and loving, I think.
Yeah.
You always felt that going into the house.
There was no deceit in their house.
Right, right.
You know, what you saw is what you got.
Yeah.
Is what they are.
Yeah. Were they, I can't remember, were they from Cache Valley or where were they from? They
from Tremont and Garland.
Garland, yeah. Okay. Both of them.
Daryl was from Garland, and I think she was, it might have been Tremont.
Tremont or something like that, okay.
Out in the same area.
Okay.
Yeah, then she got cancer, died.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and then moving to Logan, you got involved in the university at some point. I don't remember exactly when that was, but maybe talk a little bit about how did you come to work for the university? Was it through Rod Tuller, or was it just through contacts? Did you reach out? Did they reach out to you? How did that transpire?
When we came to Logan, you know, I said, if you're going to be a citizen of the community, you gotta participate.
Yeah.
And so I had been involved in politics and whatever in Mesa. And so when I came here, I began to get involved in the kind of the same thing. And Newell was running for office and mayor. And I told him that I would help him.
Yeah.
And I raised money for him and then ran a part of his campaign. And I just became involved, and the president of the university at the time was Stan Kazer. And I did a few things for the university, special projects that you know, I ran for, just a couple of things. And then Rod Tuller was the athletic director and the head basketball coach. Utah State at the same time. And they were in financial trouble. You know, the
university was?
The
athletic
department
was
in tough shape.
Oh, was it? Why was that? Just not good teams and ticket sales were down? Or?
Well, it's more of a story than you want to hear.
Okay.
It's, you know, there are very few universities that make any money with athletics.
Yeah, right.
You know, except for the big
ones. Big schools, yeah.
But the rest of them are, you know, it's really, even at BYU, the amount of traffic they get doesn't anywhere. But the way they account for that, you know, covers up all the stuff. And I was heavily involved in what they call the Big Blue, the athletic association. I was helping this and doing that. And so the Stan Kazer, who was the president, called me in one day and asked me if I would run the athletic, take over the athletic department. And we had a conversation, and I thought about it. I said, it came back, and I said, Stan, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do what you're describing to do, but I'll do it this way. We'll keep Rod. Rod was a dear friend of mine.
Okay.
Rod's a good man.
Yeah.
I mean, we played basketball together in high school.
Yeah, you guys were friends, right?
And so we were dear friends. He wanted to fire Rod. And as the athletic director. And I said, no, what I will do is I will be the acting athletic director, leave Rod as the athletic director, but I will run the department and solve the financial problems.
Okay.
Rod will remain the basketball coach.
Yeah.
And then after this year, then Rod can retire as basketball coach and remain as the athletic director.
I see.
And then I'll solve the problems that you've got, as your athletic, and I do it on the condition that that's the way it'll be organized, and I'll have absolute access to you
mm-hmm.
at any time. I said, now, I don't mean to be rude, Stan, when I say this, but that has to be. And, you know, if you're in a meeting, then I understand.
Yeah, of course.
But
if I needed I can get
walk,
time.
I can walk in and tell your secretary, she was a real guardian of
his time, sure.
And his time, and I walk in and I would say, I need to see Stan, and if you're, and she would just go, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want any hindrances or any boundaries. I access to you completely.
Okay.
And he accepted that. So Rod was the inactive. I was, and so they featured me on the papers and everything.
Yeah,
and
right.
Became the athletic director. So, and then that gave me control of all the assets and the income and everything.
Yeah.
And then we just reorganized the department, brought it to where it was good. And then by that time, then I stepped out and went from the athletic department to the development. I became director of development.
Oh, I see.
For the university. And those were 2 years at non-paid.
Okay.
I told him, I said, I don't want to get paid.
Yeah.
You
just did that because you were interested in the university's well-being, or
yes.
you felt you had a personal connection because of your time here, or, why did you do that?
It was a contribution that I could make.
Okay. You wanted to give to the community.
And I had graduate mom, wife had.
So right.
We
right.
went up there and it was
you had
was
time.
Good.
You had
and
time
I, and I was interested in athletics and whatever, and I could do something for them.
Yeah, right.
And I can't figure I can do this and carry on with my other stuff. So if I could get the right situation. And Stan was true to his agreement.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me all the latitude.
If you could go back in time, would you do that, make that same decision again? Would you serve as athletic director again? Was that good for you and for the community?
I think it was good for me and good for the university at the time, for the community. I think it was really good for the community because there was a real split in this community.
Okay.
There was a real problem. The press was after the university.
After Stan, after Rod?
After Stan and Rod and the university, because it was public knowledge about the finances and stuff that was going on. And it had to be settled down. So it worked. If you're asking me would I do it today, I have a different, I think conditions are different today. I see no need for the universities as currently constructed.
No, I mean if you could go back in time, would you make that decision again?
Yes.
Okay.
It was great for my personal growth.
Okay.
And I think I made a great contribution to the university.
Yeah.
It's not blowing. I happened to have the ability and talent in the community. It was the time when the Democrats and the Republicans both agreed that if I would run, the Democrats wouldn't run anybody against me.
Mm. As what?
For the state legislature.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. They wouldn't run anybody. If I would run, they wouldn't run anybody against me. And I that was a good... Okay, all the town fathers met together and invited me and said, if you'll do this, we won't run anybody against you, but the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yeah.
So I went down to the state capitol to register and to get the documents.
To be state legislature.
Yeah, and I went down and found out I was 6 months short of having residency.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I these guys said, oh, it won't matter. It won't matter. I said, I'm not going to do anything. Because anything I do that's against somebody, they're going to nail you. So I said, that won't work. So
You chose not to do that again? I mean, after you had residency?
Well, then I was head and shoulders involved in all this other stuff. So
okay.
That was enough for me.
Timing wasn't good. Interesting. I didn't know that you had done that.
Yeah.
It was certainly interesting, as a... and I don't remember how old I was at that time, maybe 12 or 13 or maybe 14 or 15, but I remember realizing that you were fairly well known in the community. And, you know, I would go to places and I don't know if this actually happened or was just my impression, but, you know, I would say my dad is Sid Smith. People would say, oh, you're Sid Smith's son. Oh, okay. And that was, and I was proud that that was the case, you know. And I remember one of the greatest things was going to Beaver Mountain and saying my dad's athletic director, and they'd say, here's your day pass. You know, I don't know. They must have had some agreement with Utah State or something. And, you know, I got a free pass every day that year. I mean, that was pretty awesome. I did ski a lot.
We had a lot of activities, a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite memories that you used to do with me personally was used to come and not very often, and maybe that's why it was so special, but used to, you know, check us out of school and go skiing for a half day. That was really fun.
We had a great time.
Yeah, that was fun.
We've had a good family.
Yeah. So then in Logan, what kinds of things did the kids get involved with, you know, maybe starting with Angie? Obviously was really young when we moved, but
we had Lisa involved and all the kids involved in tennis.
Yeah.
You know, we built that tennis court.
Right.
So all the kids were involved in tennis and all of them in music. Bless your mother's heart for that, you know. She was determined to have you involved in music, which is I thought was excellent, you know, because it's good for the mind. And everything that I had heard was that musicians have more capability.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how that works, whether there's more capability or you use your capability you have better. I don't know how that,
what the
real answer is. But all of you kids were involved in that, and you guys were involved in scouting, you know, and you were always involved in, you know, working around your grandma's places and helping people. And we just tried to be that kind of a family, you know, with missionary work, you know, the baptized people around, and it was fun.
Yeah. Who was influential on the family in the 8th Ward? You know, in those early years and at the Fox Farm Road.
Yeah. Which of the members of the ward were most influential on us?
Yeah. Anyone stick out? If not, that's fine. How was, you know, the church is the same everywhere you go, the doctrine obviously, but there's different kind of cultural things that you find. What was your observation about the differences in between, you know, Arizona and Utah? Anything stick out or not really?
You know, I'm sure the tendency is to say, oh, it was so much better in Arizona than here, you know. We didn't see that much.
You didn't?
We just, your mother and I, we were missionaries when we were in that ward. You know, we went out and we taught a few families and fellowshipped families. So we got a lot of that kind of spirituality that went along with it. People are different because they've had different experiences, and this was more of a closed society than Arizona was.
Closed in the sense that people were from here, they grew up here, they stayed here, right?
A lot of people were here.
In Arizona, that was transplants from everywhere.
Yeah. So, you know, that brings
openness.
It's a different kind of a culture than existed. I'm not saying one was better than the other, just
different. Yeah.
You know, so, in when you are aware of that, you live with that. The end game is, what's their level of faith?
Yeah.
You know, how do they feel about the principles of the gospel and living it and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
And I, I don't see much difference between.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of people like to make a big deal out of it.
Right.
For
right.
me, I didn't see it.
Yeah. What went through your mind? I don't know how long we'd been living in Utah. But what went through your mind when you were called in as bishop in the adversity ward? What kind of feelings did you have at that time?
I think I was delighted for the call.
Mm-hmm.
And Mother was very supportive.
Okay. Why delighted? Just
it was, you know, because they were college kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt comfortable in my skin, you know, who I was. You know, I'm not saying it was perfect, but
yeah.
I was comfortable. I had, you know, I used to read, study the gospel, and I had been on a mission. And,
yeah.
And, you know, so I had those kind of things. I felt comfortable doing the work, and then it was an age group that I liked, you know. And so, I had Runer Anderson, who you knew, Roll.
Yep.
And he was a convert to the church, mm-hmm. as my Kansas counselor. And then Max Johnson, who was an inactive member of the church.
Was he when they called him?
Was completely inactive.
Was he?
And when they called him to the state president's office to call him to that position, he thought they were going to get him to give him a bid on the parking lot, the redoing of the parking lot.
Oh, fine.
Johnson Construction was the biggest contractor. You
did
know.
You make those recommendations for those two brethren?
Yes.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I decided who I wanted. And
was that after a lot of prayer and fasting? And
no, you know, I didn't do a lot of that.
Yeah.
I should have done more. I just felt good about these two guys.
Those two guys.
And
you knew them pretty well from interactions in the community?
I knew Max. He was a fraternity brother of mine.
Oh, he was?
He was a drinker. And,
oh,
you know.
How funny.
Yeah, he was hilarious. He's just a nice guy.